A few years ago, writer, photographer, chef Maureen Aboud quit her job, left Chicago, where she lived for 14 years, and moved to San Francisco to follow her passion and attend culinary school. She now writes a popular food blog about Lebanese cuisine called Rosewater and Orange Blossoms from her home in northern Michigan. Her work has appeared in the Huffington Post, the Chicago Tribune, and the Washington Post, just to name a few. Welcome to Current State, Maureen.
Good morning, Joe.
I guess maybe more appropriately, I should say welcome home. You grew up here in Lansing, a graduate of Waverly High School. Listeners might know your surname, Aboud, from your father and your uncle's law firm, and maybe even your grandparents' grocers.
Some deep roots in Lansing, Michigan, and it is so nice to be back.
Does Lansing still feel like home?
Oh, yes. Lansing feels like home for lots of different reasons, and most especially because of the people. There are so many experiences you can have in Lansing, Michigan that you're not going to have in Chicago or San Francisco when it's where you grew up.
Yeah, exactly.
I was on the phone the other day with someone, a medical person, and it was just, they had sent it to the wrong name. They sent it to my deceased father's name, and I said who he was, Camille Aboud, and the woman said, "Oh, I loved him."
Wow.
You're not going to have that
in a
big city.
No, you're not. I mean, in fact, that becomes like one of those random chances that that's fantastic. Let's dive in here, you know, in keeping with the same tone of your writing, which is very personal, I just kind of want to get into it. You know, I want to read an excerpt first of an article that you wrote entitled Blueberry Cobbler at the End of a Long Day, which you published last August in the Huffington Post. In the piece, you describe about the moment you realized that your marriage was over, and you went to stay at your sister Peg's condo. And you write, "I could hear the sounds of baking going on in the kitchen. 'Come and measure the flour,' Peg said. 'I wouldn't.' 'Come and mix the berries with sugar,' she coaxed. I couldn't. 'Drop the dough over them then?' I had nothing of it until I smelled the berries bubbling and the shortbread crust baking. I lifted my zombie self out of bed and walked to the oven, which could tell I needed a hug. I sat down in front of her with my box of Kleenex and watched the cobbler bake. 'It might not seem like it, but it's going to be okay, I promise you,' Peg said. 'The oven said so, too.' And both of them were right." I mean, that's an exceptionally honest piece of writing, and yet it also makes me hungry. How do you combine the confessional mode of writing and writing about food?
I like what you just said, that it also makes you hungry. And I think we do hunger for lots of things in life. And one of the things that we all hunger for the most is to live an authentic life, an honest life. And when we go through difficult experiences like divorce, death, things that draw us closer to the nitty-gritty of our souls, we have an opportunity to really think about why we're here and what we want to do with our days. So as a writer, I think some of the best things that have happened to me are the most difficult things, because they've called me out into a state of vulnerability, a state of honesty, that I think makes my writing better than ever when I do that.
I think I would completely agree. And, you know, I think anyone would say, a writing teacher would say, honesty, be honest, right, with you know. And it just, when I read your blog, it comes out in post after post. You know, it's not just recipes. It's from your heart. It's honesty. And yet there is this combination between your honesty and then food. You know, why do you find your own personal narrative is so intertwined with food?
I think this goes pretty deeply into my cultural heritage, because my Lebanese family has always been very close to the table. It's a really important part of our lives, and I could see that evidence ever so clearly when I went to Lebanon for the first time last year.
And we're going to get there.
Okay. Yeah. But I do think that so much of how we share and come together as families, as friends, as communities, is through the enticement of food, and that brings everyone together at the table. And that's where we share. It's where we share love and where we share flavor and taste and enjoy, and it can be real soothing in difficult times, and it can be a terrific celebration. Just like I think so many ethnicities connect that way to one another through food. And then for me, I connect to all kinds of aspects of myself through food, and it's so much fun.
You know, I think as I'm listening to you, I kind of think of the average American sometimes, I think, misses out on some of that. I mean, we have Thanksgiving, where that's a very obvious one, but sometimes, and I'm guilty of it, you know, I kind of go through and just eat a meal to eat a meal, you know, to stop being hungry. And I think sometimes we forget the community that can surround food and a meal.
We live in a world that tempts us to that lifestyle. So it happens to all of us. We get busy. We have so much going on, so many pulls on our attention, where it could be easy to just not pay attention to the nourishment that is found not only in preparing your own food, but in eating it in a slow way, in a way that you're aware of what you're eating, and then of course sharing it with other people. And I think it's interesting, because while we're pulled more than ever away from that, there's so much trending toward an interest in that right now in the culture in general. Cooking your own food, do it yourself.
There is. I mean, you know, Mark Bittman, the well-known New York Times writer, just started a new column and, you know, just bounced to the top of the New York Times this week, and about that, preparing your own food and things, ways to do it healthy, simply, and delicious food. We are moving back to that.
It is one of the things I love about being back in Michigan after living in big cities, you know, in Chicago and San Francisco, where the dining out scene is so exciting. And you're really drawn to it, and that is a lot of fun. But then coming back here, where we have some dining options, perhaps not as many as most of us would like to see, cooking at home is really where it's at.
It is. It is. You know, there's the bounty of the farmers markets that I'm waiting for. They're just about to start around here, and I think that's going to be really exciting. And you know, there's a couple restaurants here that are starting to do farm to table in mid-Michigan, but this is a burgeoning, growing area in the restaurant business. This is farm to table.
It is, and Michigan is bountiful. It's such beautiful, beautiful farmland and so much wonderful produce in the summer. It's overwhelming.
Okay, so taking this one step further to your cooking, you know, how does cooking connect with you emotionally? You know, how do when you cook, you know, what happens inside of you?
It's an interesting juxtaposition of both introversion and extroversion, because you're generally cooking to share. And cooking with others is a lot of fun, too. But there is an internal process that goes on where you're really thinking about what you're doing and you're thoughtful about flavor profiles, what goes together, what flavors work well together, how to, you know, if you have OCD like I do in the kitchen, you want to make sure that every little thing you do is perfect. And, of course, I'm learning not to be that way as much. But it's a real nice balance of an internal process as well as a sharing process.
Do you find that you want to cook something when you're feeling a little angry or frustrated, and that ends up being a different outcome in the kitchen than, say, when you're gleeful and content?
I do like to cook for all different types of emotional experiences that I'm having, for sure.
Is the result different, or is it the same, do you find?
The result can be different, can be worse, if I'm not focusing. If my mind is elsewhere, you can burn things, you can, you know, be hasty. So I would say it's through getting in there and actually cooking that it can get you to a calmer place. But that's where you want to be to produce really, really beautiful, good food. Because out of anger, I think bad things can happen to good people.
That's right. That's right. Even in the kitchen, especially around knives and hot stoves. So, on your blog, Rosewater and Orange Blossoms, and in most of your writing, you reference your Lebanese heritage. You focus on Lebanese cuisine. You talk a lot about your grandmother and your relatives and all these traditions that you learned growing up and eating, and we've just spoken about some of that. And then last year, you went to Lebanon for the first time. I'm really fascinated by that. So up to this point, you connected to your heritage through these stories, through your grandmother, through cooking. Now, all of a sudden, there's the Arabic language, a different culture, relatives that you've met for the first time, that sense of place, of being there. I'm fascinated to know how that trip may have changed your sense of self. And then, because they're so interwoven, how it altered your approach to cooking and to Lebanese cuisine.
When you think about a place, imagine a place for so many years as I had my whole life and had heard the stories from all of my grandparents and relatives who'd spent so much time in Lebanon, it becomes this monumental thing. I was excited about it, but also a little anxious, like, I hope this meets my expectations, because I had fantasized about it for so long. But then to actually, and going to the Middle East is not, it's not like going to Italy. You know, there are safety precautions that that hover in over one's head in some ways. But then you take a calculated risk. You try to go at the right time. And that's what we did. I went with my mother and my sister, and the place was incredible. And it really opened my mind and my heart to something new. It wasn't in many ways as I imagined. It was different, because I don't know if you can really imagine something like that, a place like that. And to go, and we went up into the villages and met family, cousins that we hadn't met before, but yet we had. Looking into their faces was like, that's my cousin.
Yeah.
And that's an exciting thing.
That's got to be profound. You know, when I hear you say that, it reminds me of this anecdote about Louis Armstrong when he was traveling the world playing jazz for the State Department. He was sent to Ghana, and he tells this story where he's sitting on the stage ready to play in Ghana, and he looks out, and there's tens of thousands of people in Accra who have gathered around to watch him play. And he focuses on this woman, and it looks just like his mother, his dead mother. And he just sits and realizes for the first time, oh my gosh, this is where I'm from. And there's this profound moment to that. And that sounds like what I'm hearing from you, is there was a real profoundness to this experience. How long were you there?
Just a week. I could have stayed months. I wanted to stay longer because it's hard to leave once you get into it. And it's this very profound experience of coming home, yes, to a place where you see all these people who share a culture. Much different from living here. You know, you share a culture, even though there are certainly differences among the people that live within Lebanon, you still feel a kinship, a very strong kinship. And I was never more excited than when people would say to me that they could tell I was Lebanese. And I saw my lookalike here and there on the campus of American University of Beirut, these young women walking by, and I would think, wow, that, you know, that looks like me.
Did you stop in a cafe to write while you're there? Were you feel inspired to write, or did you wait till you came home? Did you have to process it?
I had to process it. I did write in the evenings a little bit. I was trying to deal with photography, too, which was overwhelming as well, because I wanted to take pictures of everything at all times, and I did. Stop the car!
So you've brought a few things to share with us here, to taste a little bit in the studio. We know for our listeners you can't quite taste, but maybe you can smell a little bit through your radio. There's some wonderful smells here. But first, we have to start with the bread. No? What's so special about Lebanese bread, Maureen?
Well, you'll see, Joe, that I did not bring any utensils for you to taste this food this morning.
I noticed. Nor napkins, so we
Nor
might have a little messy problem.
The bread here works for that, too. But that's because we really don't eat a meal without the bread. And I know that the carb conscious and the gluten free among us, that perks their ears. But this is such healthy, wonderful, ancient tradition bread that we have. And what I brought today is some kamej pita bread, but not the pita bread that you might find around the country in various standard
grocery
stores.
Not the thick, spongier kind, or the kind they split open and stuff in the middle. No.
Yes.
We're talking about very thin, flat
this is
bread.
Elegant, yeah. Thin, beautiful, flat bread.
I mean, we're looking at about, what, eight inch circumference?
Circumference.
Yeah, I mean, it's with Y-flat, a little bubbly.
It's got a beautiful golden hue, and it's ever so soft. It's soft like a baby's bottom. This is bread that you want to eat with the bread. It's that good. And what we do is enjoy it with every bite, taking a piece of the bread off, ripping a piece off, and then scooping up whatever it is on the plate. And that really changes the flavor of what's in your mouth. You have the chewiness of the bread.
Uh-huh.
And your bite, and it slows you down a little too, which I think is good. You can't just go fork in.
Yeah. Sit and enjoy each piece. Now, you mentioned in your blog, you mentioned that, I believe it was your grandmother, taught you at a young age, you know, the respect for bread when you drop it on the ground. And there's something you're supposed to do. There's something that kind of highlights some of this. Can you tell a little bit about that? You know?
This is really about respecting and honoring every bit of food in your home, and you wouldn't want to let anything go to waste. And that's really a different era. We throw so much food away now, and we don't think that much about it. It may bother us, but we do it. And there was a time when that really was unheard of. And if you dropped the bread on the floor, that wasn't going to go into the trash. You're going to actually honor it even more, kiss it, mm-hmm. bless it in a way, and continue to eat it.
I'm Joe Lindstroth, current state producer, sitting in for Mark Bayshore, and I'm here talking with Lansing native Maureen Aboud. She's a chef and writer. She has a popular food blog about Lebanese cuisine called Rosewater and Orange Blossoms. So we have the bread. And now we're going to move on to, we're going to need something to dip the bread in. I know you wrap bread in bread and eat bread with bread and bread. But how about libni we have here, which essentially looks like a very thick yogurt, almost a cheese.
This is the flavor maker of the plate, labneh. Really, every plate you could eat, breakfast, lunch, dinner, and in between, with a dollop of labneh is going to take you over the moon. This is thickened yogurt, homemade yogurt. Yogurt is so big right now. You're going to be able to get your thick Greek yogurt in the grocery store and enjoy it. That's great. Making it at home is a total pleasure and a really nice practice. But this labneh has been drained. So you take the thinner yogurt, you hang it, as my grandmother did, from uh-huh. the kitchen sink in a handkerchief, a thin, clean handkerchief. Or you can do it in a colander with some cheesecloth. Let as much of the whey drain off as possible, and then you get this thick, luscious spread that is delicious when you scoop it up with a little bit of the bread, as you're doing right now.
And you have sprinkled a little spice on the top. What do you sprinkle on top?
That's nana. That's dried mint.
Okay.
Which
okay.
is so good on so many things, and especially on the labneh. The white labneh with the sprinkle of dried crushed mint over the top. It's fresh. It's delicious. And it's great to have the dried mint right now before all the fresh nana comes up mm-hmm. in our gardens.
You know, I expected it to be much more sour. I've tasted, yogurt, sheep's yogurt in the Balkans, and then even plain yogurt here in the store, and it has a much more sour flavor to this. This is a little bit, but then it's just so smooth, so silky smooth.
Super smooth. And the sheep's milk does yield a much much edgier uh-huh. labneh, and I love that. And you can get your own labneh to be as sour as you like by draining it, leaving it out on the counter. Mm-hmm. It will ferment.
Now, there's something interesting you had mentioned about the culture. You need a starter culture to make yogurt. And essentially, you can keep the same starter culture going for how long?
You can. This is a little like making sourdough bread. You have a starter
exactly.
that gives you your flavor, your sourness. And with labneh, you always start with a little bit of yogurt from your last batch. If you're lucky enough to have had a last batch that you made yourself, you're going to probably gain a more complex flavor in your yogurt than if you have just a plain yogurt from the grocery store that you start with. But I love the whole idea of the starter, because when you think about making it from batch to batch, it could go back generations, really. I could be eating my great-grandmother's food if I'm using the starter that's been preserved and passed down. I would love to somehow keep that tradition going, keep a starter going. I don't think there's any starter around here that came from Lebanon when everybody immigrated 100 years ago.
That might have been a little tough with refrigeration issues and bringing that
over. It would be neat.
But that is incredibly neat. Just to even think that that is possible, though. There's a connection. I mean, you can hear it in your voice, even that the possibility of that within food. Again, there's a connection to heritage.
It's a tremendous metaphor. It really is, not just actual, but it's a great metaphor for staying connected to our past through food.
Okay, so I want to move to one last ingredient that you brought here, and that's a spice mixture called za'atar. What is that mix? What is that?
Za'atar is a combination of dried wild thyme, sumac, which is a red, very sort of sour flavor. Again, the Lebanese love the sour flavors, lemony flavors like that. And then toasted sesame seeds and a little bit of salt. And this spice mix, people are really getting into making their own. I'm seeing a lot of that chatter on the blogs online. But when you can get it at Middle Eastern markets. And just to mix it with olive oil, spread it, and when you don't have the actual bread where it's been spread on and baked, which is typical, you can make a paste with the olive oil and just dip in the like we are doing today.
It's so mild. It has flavor, but it's mild at the same time. I mean, it's really subtle. It's quite delightful, and it goes perfectly with the yogurt and the bread.
Very good.
So I want to real quickly. We only have just a few seconds left. But your blog, you're up in northern Michigan in the woods writing this blog, and you have this following. I mean, tell me about your online connection. I mean, there's all these comments. People are really enjoying this.
It's been a really wonderful gathering place, not only for people who are interested in Lebanese cuisine, but for people who love food and who love good writing and photography. And it's been great to gather together there with all of my friends online. And making new friends every week has been a thrill.
And they send you gifts.
And they send me presents. That's been a bonus.
That's pretty amazing. I think that's not just your recipes. I think that might be your personal touch too, Maureen.
Thanks, Joe.
Maureen Aboud is a Lansing native and a chef and writer. Her popular food blog about Lebanese cuisine is called Rosewater and Orange Blossoms. She's working on a memoir and a cookbook out of her blog post. You can see it at maureenaboud.com. Thank you, Maureen. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Joe.